button. Yeah, we're on. So today we're going to talk about Eliezer's conversation, his opening conversation with Rivka's family. As soon as Eliezer comes, everybody greets him, and they say, "Wow, look who's here." The Medrash tells us they thought it was Avraham Avinu. After all, they didn't see him for 65 years. And Eliezer says, "No, no, no, let me introduce myself." Chapter 24, verse 34, he says, "Vayomer Eved Avraham Anochi." I am but the servant. I'm the slave of Avraham. I'm not Avraham. The Psikta Zutasa says, he saw, they thought he was Avraham, so right away he corrected them. He said, "No, no, no, I am Avraham's servant." He doesn't say his name. It's not important who he is. The Radak explains it this way. He says, when you're trying to make a sale, if you have a weakness, the smartest thing to do is just present the weakness right away. Don't come along and try to, you know, use deception and then later say, "Oh, that's who you are." Forget about it. We don't want to do this deal. So Eliezer figured the smartest thing to say is, to begin with, if they think he's Avraham and they make a whole deal thinking he's Avraham and then they find that he's not Avraham, so they renege on the deal. So he says, "Gucky guys, let's get this straight from the beginning. Eved Avraham Anochi, I am the servant of Avraham Avinu. However, you should know, verse 35, V'Hashem Berech has Adoni Me'oid, God has blessed my master exceedingly. V'Yigdal, he's made him very great, and magnified him, V'Yitil Yitzei, Nuvokar, V'Chesef, V'Zov, V'Avadim Shvachis, U'Gmala V'Chameirim." It's a long list of stuff. He's got sheep, he's got cattle, he's got silver, he's got gold, he's got servants, he's got maidservants, he's got camels, and he has donkeys. The word va'avadim, if you look inside, you'll notice it's misspelled. It's spelled what's called chaser. It's missing a yud. So the Chizkuni says, because really and truly Avraham had one slave, one servant, and his name was Eliezer. He didn't have any other servants. But Eliezer was saying it as if, like, you know, he has servants, period. He tried to make him sound really, really big. There was no way for him to know if Avraham did or didn't have many servants. But the truth was, he was the only servant. The Rekech, Baal Rekech, says that he had some other servants, possibly. But with Avraham Avinu, it was a very, very high standard. So if you didn't measure up, you were out. If there was any kind of dishonesty or lack of integrity, anything that wasn't according to the standards of Avraham Avinu, you didn't remain in his household. And that's why he said there was a very, very small amount. If there were other servants, there were very few of them. Because, not because Avraham couldn't afford it, but because Avraham Avinu, if you worked in his house, you had to be ready to toe a certain line. You had to be prepared to live like Avraham Avinu. Otherwise, he didn't want to keep you around. At any rate, that's not important to them, so that's what we know, and that's why it's misspelled, but he is presenting them a very rosy picture of remarkable wealth. He's trying to make Yitzchok an eligible bachelor. So the next thing he says is, "Vatelet Sarah Eishas Adoni." Sarah, the wife of my master, bore him a ben, a son, La'adoni Achrezik Nasa, after her advanced age. And why does he have to emphasize how old Sarah was when Yitzchak was born? Really, what difference does that make? The Chizkuni says, he emphasizes, there are no other children. This is it. This is the one son they waited a long time for. This is it. It's the only child. Nobody else is going to be inheriting here. The Sepharno says, he thusly also emphasized how cherished and special Yitzchak was to his parents. Like parents that waited for decades and decades and decades, and finally a child is born. So they give everything for that child. That's the place that Yitzchak occupied. Very cherished, very dear to Avraham, very special. And because of this, Vayiten loy eskol asher loy, he gave him everything that he has. So Rashi says, how could Eliezer corroborate that? How would he be certain to demonstrate that Avraham had given everything that he had? And Rashi here shares something which already yesterday we learned he touched upon this. He said, yesterday we said he had it all in hand. He came with all the wealth in hand. What was that? He had documentation. So now Rashi says, "Shtar matano had alahem." He showed them the documentation in which Avraham Avinu had gifted everything to his son Yitzchak. Not he would gift, not upon demise, but everything had already been gifted to Yitzchak. Yitzchak was already the owner of everything that Avraham had. Vayashbieni adoini lemer. My master made me swear, saying, "Lo sikach isha livni mi bnei saknani." Do not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, asher anochi yeshuv ba'artzei, amidst whom I dwell. Rashi says, the emphasis was not, if he couldn't go anywhere else, so then he would create an impossible situation. They could make any demands they wanted. You have no choice. You never want the person you're negotiating with to know you have no choice. You never want them to know there's no other way out. Why would Eliezer say that? That's like the worst thing you could possibly say. If you're going into a negotiating position, you're going to tell them, listen, he has absolutely no choice. This is the only possibility that he has. Okay, so Rashi says it's not exactly so. What he meant to say was, he meant to say that this is the first blush, this is the first approach, this is what you should do to begin with. In other words, you shouldn't take a wife from my son Yitzchak elsewhere. Imloy, if not, your first try, teilech tchila al beisavi, unless you go first to the house of my father. And then later on, he'll say that im veloysoy velolecha sacharecha. So then, if they refuse to come with me, okay, then we go to plan two. But plan one, plan A, is where I am now. So I'm asked to swear to me, imloy el beis avi. This is the meaning of verse 38. Unless I first go to my father's house, teilech v'al mishpachti, to my family, v'lakcha isha livni, and you will take a wife for my son. So the first thing is you have to try to go there. And if that won't work, then we'll figure out what to do. Now, verse 38 is actually very strange, because if you remember the conversation that Avraham Avinu had with Eliezer, if you don't, you can go back and look, he never says this. Eliezer is the paragon of perfection when it comes to subservience. He introduces himself as the nameless, faceless servant of Avraham. He does exactly what Avraham says, or so it seems, and yet he's saying things Avraham never said. He's putting words into Avraham's mouth. Avraham never said, go to my father's house. He never said, go to my family. He said, go to my birthplace. He didn't say, go to my family. So what's going on here? So Rabbeinu Miyucha says, he didn't want to make a situation where they would say, oh, Avraham looks down at other people, huh? Avraham doesn't like this one, Avraham doesn't like that one. And then Avraham would come across negative. So he wanted to put Avraham in the best light. And the way to put his master Avraham in the best light was saying, here's what my master ideally would like. It's not what he doesn't want, it's what he does want. You are his first choice. You're exactly who he spoke of. And when somebody hears, he spoke of me, really? Oh yeah, yeah, he wanted you. It's not that he wants you because, well, the others are so bad, there's nothing else left. That doesn't feel very good. When somebody comes to you and says, we really want you. Well, we don't really want you, but there was nobody else. What? Like Trump. I mean, there's probably people watching out there who love him and vote with him, but a lot of people voted for him, you're right, because I'm not voting for her. Okay, I vote for him. So that doesn't feel so good when you come to a person. If you want to make him feel really good, you don't come along and say, my master said, everybody else stinks. All right, so you stink least. You're kind of okay. Well, not really, but we have no choice. I mean, he can't marry himself, so we're going to have to. So therefore, Eliezer, the truth was, Avraham really, really, really disdained the people of Canaan, the Canaanites, their behavior, and he wanted to stay as far away from them as he could, and he did not want the Jewish people to be built with them. However, he did want where Eliezer is now, but Eliezer is marshaling every ounce of wherewithal, ingenuity, and creativity so that he'll succeed. And in this way, we see something interesting. Eliezer is a servant. He follows instructions. But to really follow instructions means take initiative. Make the master's desire your desire. You were sent on a mission, make it your mission. Do what you must to ensure success. And Eliezer does. Abarbanel puts it even more stridently. He says Eliezer wanted them to think as if Avraham had spoken of them and wanted them. So they should feel really good. And if they'll feel really good about this, they'll agree. Because Eliezer is about to ask something very unusual. He's not going to say, well, we'll come back in 10 years and see if we can negotiate this. Rivka was 3 years old at the time. Which is very hard for people to understand. It doesn't fit into the rubric of reality that we live in today. However, if you study this parsha carefully and you see Rivka's behavior, how she responded to Eliezer, how she responds first things first and then second things second. Like, everything is choreographed. You'll see you're not dealing with a child here. You're dealing with a very, very mature adult, like a kid who's in 17, 18 years old in today's day and age maturity level. But nonetheless, this is, you know, almost 4,000 years ago, and we do believe, the Medrash says, that people physically were different then. The children walked, as we learned last week, children walked very, very soon, within hours of them being born. People grew up very quickly. They were physically very mature, and therefore things were different. At any rate, he's trying to curry favor with them so that they will go ahead and agree to say goodbye to their daughter and sister and probably never see her again because it's far away. And those days people didn't journey so often, and there was no FaceTime, and there was no way for them to see. There were no pictures. That was it. Goodbye. So Avraham Avinu is that's what he wanted, says Eliezer. And I said, "Va'oymar al Adoni." I said to my master, "Ule leselecha isha acharoi." Maybe she won't come with me. Who says I'll be successful? Because you don't want to guarantee success. If you guarantee success, or you guarantee you put yourself in a position where you have no choice, you have to pay any price. So Eliezer opens the door and he says, "Well, I knew there's a possibility I will fail. I know I might not succeed." Now, ulai, leselecha isha, it doesn't say ulai. Actually, it says elai. The vav is missing. And Rashi says, well, yeah. It says elai because Eliezer was saying, let me tell you the truth. Really and truly, I was wishing my daughter could marry this guy. That's a very strong negotiating point. Elai, says Rashi, ksiv, it's written. Bas hoysel el Eliezer. Eliezer had a daughter. He was looking for all kinds of ways to get Avram to agree. Avram should say, if they won't agree to come, well, then we can discuss this, Eliezer. However, that Avram should turn to him, lifnei elav, la'asiyah bitay, to marry his daughter. Avram Avinu knew exactly what Eliezer was talking about, and he was brutally honest. And he said to him, listen, Bnei Baruch, my son comes from a seed that is blessed. Ata Oru, you are cursed. You come from the land of Canaan. You come from the people of Canaan from Cham, who know you're cursed. Vein Oru medabek bebaruch. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. We can't create a Jewish people together. It's not going to happen. So Eliezer is intimating that he wished he could do this. He's saying, you people can do this. This is available for you now. The conversation continues, or the presentation, more accurately, continues. Vayomer Eli Hashem asher salachti lefanav. Avram Avinu responded to Eliezer and said, God who has gone before me, Yishlach malocha itoch. He will send his angels with you. Vehitzliach darkecha. He will surely grant you success. V'lakachta isha livni mimishpachti. You will find a woman from Bnei Mishpachti, from my family, Ube Beisavi, from my father's home. And then he says, when you will do your very best and try as hard as you can to make this happen, Oz tinoke me'olasi, then you will be cleansed or freed of this oath. Kisavi al Mishpachti, because you did come to my family. Ve'im lo yitnu lach, if they won't give her to you, and you won't be successful, Yisanoki me'olasi, then you're free, then you're exempt, cleansed of this oath. So Eliezer doesn't say, I have to succeed at any price. He says, I'm hoping to succeed. I want to succeed. I think you want me to succeed too. This is for everybody's good. But he says, I don't know that I'm going to succeed. That's the worst thing you do. You come into negotiation and say, well, I'm going to succeed. I'm getting my way anyway. Says who? Eliezer acknowledges, I'm trying. I hope you'll negotiate with me. I hope you'll understand that this is the best thing possible. And then he adds something remarkably strange. He says, I just came this morning to the well. And I said, Hashem Elokei Adoni, the God, the Lord of my master, of Avram, Im Yeshcha Nama Tzliach Darki, if only you will make me successful, Asher Anochi Holech Aleha, this path that I've embarked on. And he said, here I am standing on the well. Then there will be a young girl, and she will come out to get some water. And I will say to her, please tip your jug and give me some of that water. And she will say, you should have. You drink, and your camels as well. So then He ha'isha asher hechiach Hashem leven adeni. Then I'll know this is the girl. And he goes on to say, I didn't even finish speaking, says Eliezer. And there was Rivka. Now, the question is why he has to say, I came this morning. Of what difference does that mean? Of hayom, I came today, to be more exact, not this morning. I came today. So Rashi says, well, obviously he came today. We know he came today because Rivka showed up in the house and said, hey, I met this guy, and he's got camels, and he's got gold and silver, and he gave me some gifts. And Lavan said, oh, he's got money? Bring him home right now. And so he brought him home. He says, well, you know I came today. Why does he have to emphasize that? Up until now, Eliezer has talked about things they could not possibly have known. They didn't know what Avraham Avinu said. They didn't know about the oath. They didn't know about the son. They didn't know about the shidduch. They knew about none of this. But Ve'ave Hayoim, they knew that's the one thing they do know. What was Eliezer communicating or conveying here? So Rashi says, Va'ovei Hayoim is with emphasis to say, Hayoim Yitzasi, I left today, Hayoim Basi, I came today. This is a journey of 12 days. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't. You don't arrive the day you leave. But he says, Va'ovei Hayoim, I left today and I arrived today. Mikan, from here we see, Shekav Tzoloi Ha'aretz, that the earth sprang. And the earth somehow wrinkled. It shriveled. And Eliezer walked straight from a distant area, straight into the present. And the Gemara tells us there were three people in history, in the entire biblical narratives, for whom the earth shrank, for whom we're able to experience these kind of miracles, and so on and so forth. But here is the obvious question. Who cares? Who cares if Eliezer left this morning and came today? And besides the fact that, who cares? What is he trying to show off, that he's a magician? He's telling them about miracles. Maybe they're not going to believe in miracles. Maybe they say, this guy's a lunatic. He claims he left today, and he arrived today. Maybe the rest of what he's talking about is fanciful too. Maybe he just wants to kidnap our daughter, take her away to a distant land. Who knows what this guy has in mind? Why say things that are not believable? This does not seem like the wise thing for Eliezer to say. Besides the fact that Eliezer is saying it, which raises eyebrows, why indeed did it happen that way? We have a whole life in front of us. So what happens if Eliezer travels for 12 days? What's wrong with that? In one of the classes we gave last week, I don't remember which class it was, we talked about the idea that Avraham Avinu did not want to be healed miraculously or using other means. Because the Gemara says he had an Evan Tova, used to wear this a crystal around his neck that could heal, and healing properties. And Avraham Avinu didn't want to use it because he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah in the most literal, natural way. So if he wants to fulfill the mitzvah in a natural way, why would this process of acceleration happen? Why did he have to have Kfitza Derech? What is this all about? It's the one part of the story so far that actually does not seem to make any sense. So let's take a look in the Biurim book on page Reishayin Tes. Simen Chav Zayim, Parshas Chayisara. The Rebbe asks two questions. The two questions I just asked. He says, Yesh Lishol, number one, Hare Yadua, we have this rule which is found throughout Torah literature. And that is, She'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eisa Nisim Levatola. God doesn't do miracles for no reason. Essentially, it says that God cherishes nature. He created nature, he cherishes nature. He doesn't destroy nature unless he has to. So if he doesn't have to, he won't. A miracle means a shattering of the order of nature. Why would Hashem shatter nature? Ma haya eifa hatzorech b'nes shel kfitzas haderech? Who needed this miracle? Who needed this accelerated transportation? And what would happen if Avram showed up, if Eliezer showed up in the name of Avram a week later or 2 weeks later? She's 3 years old, for heaven's sake. They didn't even get married right away. He brought Rivka home and she was the princess living in the palace who wasn't married anyway. I think they did that to Princess Diana. As soon as she got engaged to Charles, they put her in the palace. And then years later, they found out she was very unhappy, bored out of her brains and miserable, wandering the palace all day. I think they kept it there for like, I don't know, a year or something. You're going to marry the prince? You can't just be up south in the street anymore. So they took Rivka, took her away from family, and she lived in Avram's house. For how long? For like years. Like years. So what was the rush? Why did Hashem make a miracle that didn't go anywhere? That's number one. Number two, L'shem asiper Eliezer nezel l'psul l'lovan. Who are you talking about? These cutthroat thugs, Besuel, who tried to kill Eliezer, actually, and he was prevented by the intervention of an angel. Try to poison his food. That's Rivka's wonderful father. Try to poison the slave, the guy, the person with money, so they could take his money and get rid of his body. Just dump the evidence. Anyway, nobody would care anyway. He's a servant of a Jew anyway, so it was easy to take care of. So Hashem sends an angel who intervenes, switches the plates of food around, and Besuel ends up poisoning himself. And Lavan? Well, Lavan is Lavan. I mean, we know all about Lavan. He was a creep from the moment we met him. All he was interested is in another buck. He would sell his sister, sell his mother, sell his father, whatever, to the highest bidder. That's all. So Eliezer comes and he says, I want you to know, there's a great God in heaven. He makes miracles. And I walked straight. I left 12 days away. I just walked straight into the place that it was Kafzuli Aderech, the earth wrinkled. And Lavan's looking at the guy. Right. You think he believed him? I don't know. I don't think Lavan believed miracles. I don't think he believed in God. In fact, we have a pretty clear idea that he worshipped idols. He didn't believe in God. So why would Eliezer say this? So the Rebbe suggests the following explanation. But this is not an answer to the question in a micro manner. This is a bigger perspective. And when you have the bigger perspective, you understand that the details of the questions fall away automatically. So to elevate our perspective on the situation, the Rebbe says, Al Rivka, the base Besuel, with regard to Rivka, living in the house of Besuel, our sages expound on the verse in Shir HaShirim, in the second chapter, the second verse, it says, Kishoshana ben HaChochim, like a rose amongst the thorns. And the Rebbe explains this. In other words, Kishem Shashoshana gedela, Dafka ben HaChochim, just like the roses, pointedly, and specifically grow amongst the thistles and the thorns. These thorns are like what people would call the survival of the fittest kind of thing. The thorns were built to protect the roses. It's not easy to get a rose because you got to get through the thorns. So the thorns, in essence, protect the rose from being taken. But what also happens is, in as much as the thorns are protecting the rose, there's also a problem. Mishum shebizchusa, why is it that the thorns are so kind? If they're thorny people or thorny things, so why are they nice to the rose? Well, the answer is very simple. Because when people have a rose garden, they water the bush. Why do they water the bush, the rose bush? Because they want the roses. So it's in the thorns' best interest to hold on to the roses, because as long as we have the roses, we get watered. As soon as we turn into thorns, nobody cares about us. So basically, the rose is the hostage. It's a way for us to extract, to get out what we want, because we've got the roses. And that's why, because they have the roses, zoichim afheim lahashkoya u litipuach, that's why they get watered, that's why they get taken care of. Kach, so too, godlo Rivka hatzadekes ben harishoyim. Rivka, the extraordinarily righteous woman, lives amongst extraordinarily wicked people. They weren't letting Rivka go so fast. They liked having Rivka. Rivka was a good thing for them. Unless Eliezer would come with a very strong argument. They weren't just going to say, oh, you want Rivka? Sure, take Rivka. Rivka was the goose that laid golden eggs. They understood that Rivka was at tzadekes. They understood that she brought blessing to the house. They wanted to hold on to Rivka. You had to give a really good reason for them to let Rivka go. V'lachein, kol eid leimilu l'Rivka shalish shanim v'yemechad. For as long as Rivka wasn't 3 years and a day, lehoya b'yicholtish l'Avram l'haschil lifel pe'ulos l'hitza'asa m'beisavie. He couldn't even begin to try to take her out. Because up until that point, she was entirely a minor, and there was nothing to talk about. Chikain, k'yiches atumah lehoya ma'afshirim zeis. The forces of spiritual impurity who held and clung to Rivka would not allow for any, in any way, shape, or form, for Rivka to be released. After the 3 years passed and that threshold is completed. So Bekach Nasir Uyulihi Nasili Yitzchak. Now she was ready to become, to go independent. So therefore, Neitzra Taina Shahoya Bekoicha Lahitzias Rivka Me Besavia. Now it was possible to extricate Rivka. Verak Oz Haya Yachal Avram Lashleiches Eliezer Le. Eliezer was dispatched on Rivka's third birthday. Because before she was three, efforts couldn't be made. The day she turned three, the day Avram calls Eliezer and says, Simna tachas yarechi, I want you to make this oath and carry out my mission that I give you. Yachad im zeis, along with this entire story, this whole picture, this narrative, mirega shanetzra efsharis lahaitzi es Rivka mebeis Besuel, from the moment that it's possible to extricate Rivka from the house of Besuel, from the moment it's possible, hayatzeirich lahaitzia misham miyad, from the moment it's possible, it was necessary. Why? Kedei shalayte olaitz lishayz bein erishayim regam yuta, so that Rivka shouldn't remain amongst the wicked for even one extra moment. Because what happens if she remains amongst the thorns for one extra moment? They're like a cancer, Rachman Latzan. They're siphoning off the lifeblood. They're draining Rivka. And if Rivka remains there, Rivka can actually be harmed.
Why couldn't that happen prior to when she was three?
Because prior to when she's three, Avraham Avinu has in no way the right or the ability to try to extricate her.
But how could they not affect her before three, but they couldn't affect her after?
It doesn't say they couldn't affect her before three. It's that Avram couldn't do anything about it until she was three. But the moment she's three, Avram can do something about it. And because he can do something about it, he must do something about it. He can't delay even a day. The day it's possible is the day he sends Eliezer. And because of this, that's why a miracle happened for Eliezer. Why? To protect Rivka. So this is the question, original question was, who needed the miracle? And the answer was, we need the miracle. Rivka needs the miracle. The rose needed to be cut from the thorns as soon as possible. So that she could be taken from there, so that she isn't going to be harmed. Since Eliezer understood very well, this was not an easy mission. Eliezer was an extremely intuitive individual. In fact, it's brought down, Ibn Shu'ab says, that Eliezer figured out human nature. He could read a person like this, very smart guy. He took one look at Rivka, he read Rivka like a book. He knew she was very righteous. He took one look at Besuel, one look at Lavan, he knew exactly who he was dealing with. And Ibn Shu'ab says, because of his incredible intuition, because he was so wise and so learned, that's why Avram chose him for the mission. He needed somebody who really understood what was going on. Eliezer is not just a fool guy. He's an extremely capable individual. So he figured out who these guys are. And he knew they're going to give him a hard time and not going to easily allow Rivka's release. Kifisha Achen Darshu, as we see, that's exactly what happened. They said, Teisha v'anayda yitanu yamim ayasar. Let her wait. Let her wait a year or 10 months. So therefore, Sipur Lehem Eliezer. Eliezer said, look, let me explain this with you. I'm on an urgent mission here. Time is of great issue. You don't have any extra time. And because you don't have any extra time, Eliezer said, I'm a man with a mission, and I'm a man with a miracle. I came here with a nes of Kfitzas HaDerech. And the reason I came here with the Kfitzas HaDerech is Kedei Lehaver Lehem. He wants to communicate to them, Goyd Lehechech, the great need that he feels, Lahitzi Esrifke Mibinehem Miyad. And they understood. They weren't happy about it. They weren't prepared. They understood. Who makes the decision in the end? Rivka makes a decision. And from here our sages tell us that heaven forfend, chas v'shalom, that a woman should ever be forced into marriage. Forced marriage has nothing and never had anything to do with Judaism. Heaven forfend. They said, nishala es piha. We have to ask Rivka. Even Lavan and Besuel understood, or Besuel was gone by that time, but Lavan understood and her mother understood this was not their decision, but marriage ultimately is the decision of the bride. And so they asked Rivka, and Rivka said, I'll go even if you don't let me go. I'm out of here. Because Rivka was Rivka. Very mature, very righteous, understood her position, and understood that remaining in the house of her family could only be detrimental.
The Eliezer's timing, why didn't you leave 20 days earlier?
Ah, with Eliezer's timing, why didn't he leave 20 days earlier? So you have to understand that when the patriarchs and matriarchs did things, it was effective, not only in a literal level, but even the plans they made were effective. Up until the third birthday of Rivka, Avram couldn't do anything. The moment he could do something, he dispatched Eliezer.
It was 12 days later.
That same day that Avram Avinu took his first effort, made the first effort, started the process, that same day Eliezer arrived, and Eliezer himself understood how critical this is, how important timing was. And therefore he said, listen, I left this morning, I came today, let's get this done.
So why Avraham Avinu didn't send Eliezer straight to Rivka's family? Why all these...
Why did Avraham not send him straight? There's a beautiful story told that Ariel Sharon is in the Rebbe's office, and the Rebbe asks him, when are you leaving back to Israel? Mm-hmm. And Ariel Sharon says, I'm leaving this evening. And the Rebbe hesitates, and he looks at General Sharon, and he says, it's probably a good idea for you to delay your trip. And the miracle is that Sharon listens to the Rebbe, cancels his flight, and that flight is hijacked that day. Mm-hmm. And you know who the terrorists are looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Ariel Sharon. In the end, everybody's released. And Ariel Sharon wasn't on the plane, to their chagrin and disappointment. And Ariel Sharon goes right back to the Rebbe. And he says to the Rebbe, if the Rebbe knew the plane's going to be hijacked, why didn't he tell me? We could have caught them. We could have prevented the people were in danger. The Rebbe said, I didn't know. So he said to the Rebbe, if you didn't know, why'd you tell me not to go on the plane? And the Rebbe said, the moment you told me you're not going on the plane, a deep feeling of uneasiness washed over me. And the Rebbe said, I learned to trust my instincts. So tzaddikim sometimes have an awareness. Avraham Avinu did not, probably couldn't have told you exactly what was going to happen. Maybe he didn't know exactly what was going to happen. There was no prophetic communication where Hashem said to Avraham, A, B, C, and D. So he knew exactly what was going to happen. But Avraham was in tune with things. He understood the day Rivka turned three, somehow he knew now was the time he had to make his move. So he calls Eliezer. And he sends Eliezer. And he knew things were going to work out. He said, I'm sending a malach with you. He knew things were going to work out. Exactly how they're going to be, Avraham didn't know exactly how it's going to be. And this, on the other hand, Eliezer, who is a true trusted servant, once he made that commitment to Avraham, he wasn't playing any games. He understood that whatever Avraham told him was of critical importance. He dedicated himself to his mission absolutely, and he comes home successful. And there's so many lessons to be learned.